Okay, back to the 1995 theme. So where were you in 1995? You know, I know, like, for my parents' generation, there are probably several iconic moments, but one, they all know where they were when the moon landing happened, for those of you who believe that actually occurred. For my generation, at least in 1995, I think the most iconic moment was this. And I'm not going to say anything controversial on guilt or innocence, but I will say, when you look at that picture, those gloves do not fit.
But your most iconic moment wasn't the expiration of the Superfund tax?
All right, 1995, this is what cell phones look like. Floppy disks went the way of the dodo bird. Houston Rockets won the NBA championship. All right. I know there's a Mavs, at least one Mavs fan back there, sorry. Other sporting news, who cares? Most popular TV show and the inspiration for our panel title, Seinfeld. We're back. Okay, next topic is going to be an introduction to the economic substance doctrine as it applies to excise tax credits. And we're going to use 6426B, which is the alcohol fuel mixture credit, really as a case study or just kind of an illustration of the issue. Between 2009 and 2011, this credit it was a 45-cent credit per gallon, and an alcohol fuel mixture is defined as a mixture of alcohol, for example, ethanol, and a taxable fuel, for example, gasoline. And the credit is most often claimed for this first of the two uses, and that's if it's sold by the taxpayer producing such mixture to any person for use as a fuel. Okay. Enter the Chemoil Corp case, and this is still pending. This was filed in district court in the Southern District of New York, and there are actually two sets of fact patterns in this case. One involving Astra, one involving Gunver. I'm just going to talk about the Astra one because it's the simpler fact pattern, at least the way the court describes it. I don't know that the litigants would agree with this characterization, but the fact pattern is essentially this: that Chemoil purchased ethanol from Astra. It mixed that ethanol with a small amount of gasoline, and then it sold the mixture back to Astra for 40 cents per gallon less than what Chemoil had paid Astra for the ethanol. So on a pre-tax basis, Chemoil's losing 40 cents a gallon. On a post-after-tax basis, if they get the 45-cent credit, they're making 5 cents a gallon, assuming there are no other economics in play, and there are sometimes RINs that are being separated, and you can get economic value for that and maybe some other things. But to keep our illustration simple, this is kind of the fact pattern that was teed up in the Chemoil case, and the government argued that this doesn't survive the economic substance test, and the district court agreed. And applying the economic substance test, and let me first preface this by saying this is the common law economic substance test. You know, there's the codified version in 7701, but that generally applies just to income taxes, and we're talking about excise taxes here. And then with respect to the common law test, there are different versions of that test in different circuits, and so the court here is applying what it perceived as the applicable test in the Second Circuit, which is the circuit to which this case would have been appealable to. So court focused on two factors, an objective factor and a subjective factor. The objective factor is whether the taxpayer had an objectively reasonable expectation of profit apart from tax benefits from the transaction. And the court found that there's no serious question that Chemoil sold ethanol at a pre-tax loss. And that's really the main point or illustration we want to make for this slide. And it raises, you know, an interesting academic question, policy question, legal question about whether a pre-tax profit should be required in the incentive tax credit context. Because if you think about it, I mean, presumably, and hopefully I'm not being presumptuous by saying this, but some credits that Congress enacts, it enacts to encourage investment into an activity that otherwise would be unprofitable. And, you know, if you listen to the last panel, they mentioned a bunch of credits. One was 45Q. You know, that's the sequestering carbon dioxide, you know, pumping the carbon dioxide back into the ground. That activity has zero revenue associated with it. I suppose you could be doing it for a third party, but that's generally not the context in which it occurs. So that's never going to be a profitable transaction. You know, there's also kind of the classic case of a taxpayer selling a taxable bond to buy a tax-exempt bond that actually pays at a lower interest rate, but on an after-tax basis, it's more profitable for them.